It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Oh, here I am, and I am joined in the studio by the ever...
Grumpy?
And I was going to say high personality, Scott Connor, who I have teased to the point that he's ready to start swinging at me, I think. But
no,
anyway,
not at all.
We're going to swing on the market and the unemployment numbers.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
All right, Scott, I know there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, Friday's market was not so great, and it was really all based on the unemployment numbers. There's some other stuff kind of going on here and there, but to be candid, I thought the market on Friday would be a lot worse than it was. The Dow ended up down 170, S&P down 22. That's a pretty meaningful move on the S&P. It's not the end of the world by any means, but NASDAQ, a pretty rough day, down 68, led down by Apple, which fell below its 50-day moving average in a significant way, all the way down to $5.66 a share for Apple. Gold up a little bit at $16.43. Oil down $4 at $98.50 on the close Friday.
Under 100. Well, and is that just... I read something about the clerics in Iran are either doing something to compete with... I can't pronounce
his name. Ahmadinejad?
Yeah, him.
Well, it really,
something going on there.
Yeah, from the analysis that I've read, there really were two main factors on pushing oil down below $100, which is a welcome thing. And candidly, I filled up this morning and paid $3.73, although it made, you know, like a $4 difference on a full tank. That's all right. But anyway, first of all, the unemployment numbers on Friday morning led to a slowing recovery, which leads to slowing demand. I think that was the primary factor. But also, the UN Security Council said that they are expecting their talks with Tehran to lead to some concrete steps toward a negotiated solution to the ongoing nuclear issues that we're having. So I think those two things combined pushed us down. I think we'll actually stay in the 90s for maybe the most of next week, although I think that pullback to 100 is pretty inevitable.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll work something out where they'll have it so that Iran can have nuclear technologies, but just peaceful stuff kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of tricky. It's got to be monitored, and it's that always hasn't worked very well, where we've had countries that, oh, we're going to do the peaceful thing. But a country where it has worked, if I understand correctly, is India. Had, all the non-proliferation treaties and that they're doing peaceful stuff.
Well, certainly it's better for the people of Iran if they no longer have to live in the Stone Age. But it's not good for the world if Iran can bomb other people into the Stone Age. So,
well put.
That's kind of a tough battle there. Other things in the market, I'm gonna leave the unemployment number alone for just a minute because I know we want to talk about that at some length, but... we mentioned Apple, so a rough day there. On the other side of the tech trade, LinkedIn had a really, really nice day on Friday. They announced really, really good earnings Thursday after the close. And then they also announced that they bought a company called SlideShare. I know you are a LinkedIn user, and SlideShare is a new application that they're going to add to their product there at LinkedIn that allows you to put slideshows and PowerPoints actually embedded in your LinkedIn profile.
That's cool. I thought, you know, with their jump and the stock went up how much?
It was up about 10%.
See, I thought maybe they found out I was up to 82 connections.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've really been working hard on the LinkedIn connections.
Well, they really had spectacular numbers. Net income rose to $5 million from 2.1 for the same quarter a year ago. That's a really meaningful move. And they really didn't pay that much for SlideShare. It was $118 million or so, and it's something that they're going to make a meaningful part of their product. So pretty good stuff there coming out of LinkedIn.
You know what? Actually, to have that kind of profit, I know that doesn't sound like much by Wall Street standards, but to have that kind of profit for a company the age that they are is pretty good.
Yeah, they just went public last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that – and they're still getting – you know, they're still getting all of people to sign up, and it's free. If you're in business and you're not on LinkedIn, you might want to take a look at it. It's just LinkedIn.com.
Yep. Also in corporate news, really interesting stuff coming out of Yahoo. Have you seen any of this nonsense?
I haven't. What's going on with them?
It's a mess. You know, Yahoo has had a revolving door of CEOs, and they have a terrible board that has terrible relationships with their shareholders. One of their main shareholders is this guy named Daniel Loeb. He's the manager of a hedge fund called Third Point. They own about 6% of Yahoo. He wants some seats on the board, by gosh, and he's serious about it. He wants four of them.
Four?
Yeah, well, he's got 6%. That's a really meaningful ownership. It doesn't sound like it, but it is. He wants four seats on the board. Yahoo says, no, thank you. And so he goes back to his office and circles up some henchmen, I think, and basically says, find out every piece of dirt you can for me on the CEO and the board members and come back.
Nice.
So the story is that the CEO of Yahoo has been telling people on his resume and in radio interviews that he has a degree in computer science from Stonehill College, granted in 1979.
Oh, boy.
Well, Mr. Loeb found out that Stonehill didn't actually even grant computer science degrees until 1983. So there's, you know, kind of a credibility problem there. They also found the same thing, not exactly the same, but the same type of idea on one of their board members who led the search for the CEO, which led to the hiring of this CEO that's now in this mess. So,
maybe the CEO will be revising his resume.
Oh, he'll be revising it, all right.
After the release of the information.
Yeah, and then one last piece of corporate news. This one's just for you, David. Disney, big weekend for Disney. They launched the Avengers movie.
I'm looking forward to it.
Are you really?
Yeah, it's a big deal. Yeah,
Thor, the Hulk, Captain America, those three I'm familiar with. Black Widow, never heard of. Iron Man, vaguely familiar. And Hawkeye is a new name to me. However, the movie has released internationally, and over last weekend did $280 million. That does not include releases in Japan, China, and Russia, expecting about $500 million in ticket sales. Just this weekend, and at the launch on Thursday night last week, about 2,500 locations, 95% of all showings sold out.
Yeah, their budget was around $200 million, so they've got cost recovery pretty much already. They probably hit $1 billion in sales. I mean, it's
not to mention all the nonsense that I'll have to buy at Christmas, and of course, Warner Brothers comes out with Dark Knight later on this year, so that'll be big entertainment news as well.
And they're already talking about having Iron Man 3, and then, of course, there'll be other spinoffs and all
terrific
kinds of good stuff.
Can't wait.
That I'm sure you can't wait to to see. I'm going to see it. I want to get my son out there to see the... he needs to watch Iron Man 1 and 2, and then he needs to see Thor, and he needs to see Captain America. Then we can see the Avengers.
Well, you have a big weekend.
That's the prescription.
You have a big weekend.
I'm just deciding that he's old enough to watch all those. So, got to be a good parent. All right. Well, we're going to be a good radio program. Take a quick break. Come right back. Stay tuned because we have to talk about unemployment numbers. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
We got to break it down for you, ladies and gentlemen, and it's not good. not good at all. And the big question is, which I know we need, well, let's talk about the unemployment number. Then I'm going to ask you, of course, the question you know I'm going to ask Scott is why, what's going on? Why is it the way it is? And if the economy is so good. So
yeah,
tell them what's going on with the unemployment numbers.
Well, the unemployment rate came out, the unemployment rate for April came out on Friday, and it said that the unemployment rate fell to 8.1% from 8.2%. That's the lowest level since President Obama took office in 2009.
Wow.
Unfortunately, the economy added only 115,000 jobs last month. Analysts were hoping for 170,000, somewhere in that range. So pretty big miss there. The biggest problem with the number is that the jobless rate fell in April because 342,000 people, that's a lot, 342,000 out-of-work Americans stopped looking for work altogether, and thus they are no longer considered to be unemployed. That's the participation rate, which we have talked about a number of times. The participation rate is now 63.6%. That basically means that 37% of the people who could be and should be looking for a job, they've just forget it. I'm not
so
even looking.
So if tomorrow a million people who are looking for jobs say, you know what, I'm just going to just go do something else.
Yeah, we'd get 7% unemployment, maybe less.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's progress, right?
Yeah, the actual unemployment figure, if you take people who are underemployed, meaning people who are working part-time for
economic reasons,
and you add back in the participation rate, the unemployment rate is about 14.5%. That's a big number.
That's ugly.
Yeah, it's hard to grow when you have that many people not working. Now, this number could have been a lot worse. We could have had negative jobs growth. And I will say that the government has done a very, very good job of cutting jobs, which is cutting spending, right? So that has had a big impact on jobs. They are cutting jobs. They're doing it consistently, and they're doing it fairly deeply. The other piece of good news in the report that came out on Friday was that, you know, I love the revisions, but we'll take good news where we can get it. They went back and they revised February's number. They said in February we created 240,000 jobs. They pushed that back up to 259. March's number, they moved from 120,000 to 154,000.
Which parts of government are cutting? Are you talking about the federal, the state, the local?
All of it.
All of it?
All of them.
And do you know any particular areas at the federal level they're cutting?
No, I could find out, but
I'm just curious where the cuts are being made. Because, you know, the big question, if you look at this, Scott, and ladies and gentlemen, if you look at what's going on here, I'm not getting a real warm and fuzzy about the reliability of these numbers. And I know we've joked around about the revisions, but, you know, the Department of Labor is a cabinet-level department, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are the ones that have the bureau within that, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And the Department of Labor has a $10 billion, more than that, $13, $14 billion budget. And so part of that is to get the numbers right and to know what our economic numbers are. But I read that to do this survey of, you know, people that are unemployed, the Bureau of Labor Statistics basically makes a phone call. They call people and they call it it's got a funny name. It's called the Household Survey.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. That's pretty simple. And they call the people and they ask them, have you looked for a job in the last 4 weeks? And whatever the answer is, that gets tabulated. So if they say, no, I haven't, they're taken out of the number. That's pretty changeable or malleable or
it is imprecise.
Subjective.
It is at best imprecise. Now, but even with an imprecise number, if it's applied in a consistent manner year after year after year after year, then it's still a meaningful number.
Because it's relative speaking.
Right. Okay. Whether or not it's been applied in the same process, I don't remember revisions being this significant in years past. Maybe they have been. But it seems to me that we have more revisions and the revisions are more meaningful than what I recall in the past.
Well, you know, we can't avoid the elephant or donkey in the room. And that is that we have a new election in 6 months.
Yeah.
And so I think people are going, okay, is this, how much of this is political? I mean, it would be sad to say that the Department of Labor is politicized or would skew numbers. If I also remember correctly, there's been no sitting president reelected with an unemployment rate over 8%.
Right.
So what we're saying is that these unemployment rates are not going down because of jobs being created.
Yeah, I do think we had some jobs created.
Some.
But I don't think it wasn't enough to move the unemployment rate. What moved the unemployment rate was the change in participation.
Yeah, because otherwise it would have gone up to like
8.83, 8.4, something like that.
But so here's the fundamental question that I started to get into earlier, which is what our listeners want to know. Scott, if the unemployment is just, the numbers aren't going, it's meager, it's scant, it's weak, well, it's weak jobs. Does that mean the economy's growing, or are we really? I mean, because you hear about the manufacturing and...
Well, really, it all rolls up to GDP, right? And we have seen increase in the GDP. So, I mean, I think technically the answer to your question is, yeah, we're growing, but...
So we're growing, but it's a... I hate to use the word, but it's a... It's jobs light. It's a...
Light?
It's,
a, it's okay. Jobs anemic.
It's jobless. It's a jobless recovery.
Yeah. I mean, we have had some decent months, and definitely the employment situation is better now than it was a year ago. I think there's no question about that. But at this pace of growth of jobs, we're going to be in this sort of, you know, semi-recession for a long time.
Well, and I guess here's another way of saying it. If we were in the midst of a strong economic recovery, we would see 400,000 or 500,000 jobs being created
a
month, right?
That's right.
So we're not getting that.
Yeah.
So there's no such, there is not this economic recovery that we all hoped would be. Now, the manufacturing numbers have been looking good.
Yeah, but one of the problems that we're having from the manufacturing sector is that we have become too darn efficient. Employers are actually producing more goods now than they were with 20% more workers, you know, at the beginning of the fall in 2006, 2007. So the worker has become so much more efficient that it kind of invalidates the necessity for more hiring.
So that means then that either, and there is a demand for skilled workers.
Yeah.
A lot of demand. So people, you know, again, it's, you say, well, it's easy to say, let me go get some new skills. But I think a lot of it is trying to get businesses, people to start new businesses, to try to develop services that are needed, and to bring the jobs back home, so to speak.
Yeah. The rate of new businesses being started is historically low right now.
Mm. It's very interesting stuff. Well, we'll have to monitor it. You've had a sell-off with the market. A sell-off is probably too strong of a word. You think this will continue going into the next couple of weeks? What do you think?
I think we'll continue to see volatility. Anytime you're in an election year, you're going to see increased volatility. You know, the numbers in the first quarter of 2012 were pretty consistently positive.
All the earnings are good?
Yeah, the earnings have really been what have propped us up. What we're seeing from an economic standpoint, contrary to first quarter where everything was pretty positive and trending upward, now we're starting to see some sort of fluctuation, a positive number, a negative number, and some spinning around there. So we really need to see these numbers start to take a meaningful trend in one way or the other before we know how to react to it.
So let's say somebody's got $100,000, okay? They don't need it right away. Looking for long-term investing, okay? Put it in. Go ahead and put it in the market now.
Well, I mean, you know, we're never proponents of putting it all in all at once, and it really depends on your risk tolerance. There are other investments besides the stock market.
Right.
It just happens to be what we talk about most of the time.
Okay.
But for long-term purposes, I am still of the belief that the stock market is the best opportunity for growth.
Okay. So somebody's looking for long-term growth. They're willing to take some risks. Because I think some people out there that are listening may say, well, you know, Scott, I hear what you guys are talking about. Golly, seems like I should wait or I should bide my time. Well,
yeah.
The answer to that question, of course, is how long you plan. You don't have to pick the perfect day to invest in a year.
Right. If you're waiting for the perfect time, you'll wait forever.
You will. So, but if you're looking at investing over the next 5 to 10 years, you don't have to pick a day
right.
That say, okay, let me wait for the market to drop X amount.
That's right.
Now, your point's good, and this is what we do for our portfolios, is we don't necessarily put it all in on one day.
That's right.
You know, you're looking at the market, you're looking at the numbers, and then you're choosing when to go in with part of the portfolio. Sometimes it takes, a couple of months to fully...
Oh, yeah, certainly, yeah. I mean, really, in the lifespan of a 15-year portfolio, a couple of months is nothing.
All right, well, good stuff. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Did you know living longer could be the death of your retirement? According to the U.S. Census Bureau, babies born today can expect to live until an average age of 78. Whether you're retiring today, tomorrow, or in 20 years, you must ask yourself, will your retirement plan go the distance? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
All right, we're back. We're back. Lisa's testing me with my ability to come back from break. Where do I go from here? Look, I don't want to create unnecessary worry for you out there, but I keep looking at these unemployment numbers. I keep watching this. And again, we live and breathe this every day. You know, from first thing in the morning, I start with my three newspapers and then we do the radio show and we work with clients all day and I'm talking to people. And my perception that a lot of the clients I'm working with is there is an optimism about hopefully things getting better. But when we see these numbers and we see the market behaving the way it has, Scott's point was right on. And that is that if it wasn't for really strong corporate earnings, we would be seeing a very different reaction from the stock market. Because we've got, again, Europe is still on the, it's still on the burner. It may be on the back burner right now because there's no, something really nasty isn't happening overseas in terms of their economies, but many of them are in recession. But we've got this unemployment thing and 100-some-odd thousand jobs being created. It will just take forever. And Scott's point also about our becoming more and more efficient with our businesses because of the technologies, because of what we can do. So what that means, if you ask me, and you haven't, but I'll answer anyway, what that means is happening, and this has been written about by a variety of papers, Bloomberg and a few others. What that means, what's going on, is we have what's called this hollowing of the middle. We have the hollowing out of the jobs in the middle, the middle income jobs, because some of them have gone overseas and haven't come back. And you have the workplace efficiencies that have eliminated those. So, for example, I've got a technology manager in the way of Lisa who does the work of probably two or three people because she's efficient. And she's got the technology and the tools to do the work that may have required two people 5 or 10 years ago. And so she's got the radio board she runs. She's got the server room. We keep all of our financial data and information backed up and safeguarded and passwords that are a mile long. So it's caused this hollowing in the middle. And so the question for our politicians and would-be leaders is how do they address the real challenge for America, which is how do we get more good-paying jobs? And there's a cartoon that kind of irritated me that was in, I saw it in the paper the other day, and it had a, you know, it had the economy being personified by a Superman-like character, and the economy was all smiles and big teeth and big grin and saying, I'm doing great, and then the younger person over says, I need a job, and the Mr. Superhero economy says, fix me a latte, and that's the job, implying that the economy is doing better, the stock market is doing better, businesses are doing better. We're reporting corporate earnings that are better, but the jobs aren't being created. And, you know, I didn't give a statistic, but really one of the things that was interesting, and we're talking about unemployment, and I had to double check to make sure I wasn't talking about Spain. Let me see if I can grab it for you quickly, but the, here we go, where is it? Unemployment rate among job seekers between age 16 and 19 was 25% in April. So all joking aside, the jobs are not there. So what that means is we're seeing people give up. And so that's where this lowering unemployment rate is coming from. Make no mistake, the job picture is not improving. It's slowing. And so that is not good at all. Now, so the question then, the big question I started to get to is what are our leaders and the politicians to do about this hollowing of the middle? Well, I jotted some notes down, and I'm not running for office, but here are some of the things that they really need to be thinking about. I think that a lot of what we talk about, it translates to what do businesses need to do. We've talked on a previous show about the small businesses are the ones creating a lot of the jobs. Amen to that. That's the backbone of America. Well, what can we do to get small businesses to take that next leap? The way people get jobs is not by the government creating them. It's by private sector hiring. And when a private sector hire, that's not some amorphous, vague business entity. That's people like me. That's like people that own law firms and doctor's practices and the person who has the garage or whatever, the people that have businesses, the hardware store. And so what do you do to get them to take the risk of creating another position so that they can hire somebody? Well, let me take a quick break and I'll come back and I'll tell you what I think needs to be done. Stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
All right. Well, let's come back. And where I left you hanging, sorry for that, was that, you know, what do we do about all this stuff? And how do you get the small business owner to hire people? I'll tell you what I think. Here's you've got to remove uncertainty, because business hates uncertainty. Business owner deals with enough uncertainty. If you look at a financial practice like mine, I know the financial business, so it's an easy example for me. I've got regulatory uncertainties. You know, we've got the regulators that might want to change the rules on us, or I've got the nature of the business of what we're in. We've got different things that happen. We've got health insurance costs that go up every year. We've got uncertainties. So don't make it more uncertain for us. And so how do we do that? Well, we simplify the tax code. We don't have these and this punt every 2 years of kicking the ball down the field that we're gonna get rid of those Bush tax cuts. You know, we can't be given a big cut to the wealthiest people because they're the ones that got money they shouldn't have gotten, and the little guy's hurting. Well, guess what? The people that take the risk, that start businesses, are the ones who may pay a higher bracket. And that's a whole other question. Get rid of this uncertainty. Simplify the tax code. Stop the nonsense about it's all of a sudden now it's a crime to be successful. When did that happen? Success used to be celebrated. If people aren't successful, they can't give money to charities. If people don't make money, they can't support all the initiatives that, thank God, government doesn't do and that the private sector does do through charities. Get rid of this nonsense with this healthcare uncertainty. Okay. Don't tell people they have to buy health care. Be positive. I haven't seen a positive speech from our leaders in I don't know how long. Nobody's come out and said, United States is the greatest place in the world and we're going to rebuild it. I haven't heard that. Have you? Stop beating up those people that take jobs. You know what? Stop beating up the people that create jobs. If you're listening to me and you have a job, then you can thank a business owner or you can thank the taxpayers, not the government, the taxpayers. That's the source of all jobs in this country. They're not created out of thin air. And guess what? The taxpayers, that's you and me. And thankfully, this Buffett tax nonsense hasn't been brought up lately. I'm glad, because it's a big distraction. Either Mr. Buffett is paying his secretary $700,000 a year. I'd like to apply for that job, Mr. Buffett. I'll get you your coffee hot if you like it with two creams and a sugar. And stop playing games with calling it, you know, this 30% bracket, because they're rolling in payroll taxes and income taxes and they're playing games with the numbers. Who knows what the truth is? We need a simple tax code. We need it to be easy for people to understand, and stop making it difficult for people to plan their future. That's what I would do, and that's how we do it. And you know what? If you simplify the tax code, you'll have businesses that will come back from overseas where people have gone seeking. You know, a lot of big businesses, the multinationals, they'll figure out where they can go to put their, they play games with where they report their revenue, and so that they can get it exposed to the lowest taxes. And that's what they do. And why would we be surprised? So make a simple tax code. I think people will come back. Businesses will come back. So that's my two cents. We'll be continuing to watch what unfolds with this unemployment rate. And we've got 6 months before we elect our next president. And so what we need to be listening to is, what is your plan for either candidate? What are you going to do? Not about, I'm going to, you know, favor this group or that group, or you can count on me to beat them up or to, you know, stick them full of holes like a pincushion. What are you going to do to lift all boats? What are you going to do to make this economy grow? And we've got to have jobs. If we don't have jobs, real estate's not going to improve. And if those real estate doesn't improve, it's going to be a continuing drag on our economy. So there you have it. Those are my two cents. Be sure to tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Real- Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 ton, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.